Today's healthcare can be confusing, frustrating, and at times, downright scary. Here to help with clearing up the confusion, putting an end to the frustration, and making it a lot less scary, here from Los Angeles are your hosts, Eric and Roy, on the Informed Patient Radio Show.
Welcome to the Informed Patient Radio Show, and I am your host, Eric, and sitting across from me is Roy. We'd like to thank you very much for tuning in again, and we hope to give you information to help you and your family deal with the healthcare industry. But first, let's get to the news. What do we got, Roy?
Hi, Eric. One of the things in the news today for medical has to do with Medicare overpayments. So physicians are basically obliged to look for Medicare overpayments now.
Wow. Okay.
And physicians must not only return Medicare overpayments within 60 days of identifying them, but they have to actively look for these overpayments through what they call self-audits and other forms of research.
So they're going to have to become more proactive in looking for these overpayments in a certain window of time frame?
Yeah.
Okay.
And if a physician fails to hand back these overpayments within that 60 days, he or she is risking getting sued by the government under the False Claims Act. FCA is what they call that.
That doesn't sound good.
Absolutely. This new regulation provision of the Affordable Care Act that requires physicians, hospitals, and other healthcare providers to return overpayments when they identify them and on their own. Basically, they have to return these on their own.
Okay. So I guess this is yet another response from Medicare and the federal government to help control costs and cut down on fraud and tighten their belt. As you know, you and I as case managers, we've seen over the years on Medicare's just tightening their belts.
It's affected the whole medical system.
Absolutely. Period, yeah. So what else do the physicians face if they don't comply?
Well, it says here in the terms of safeguarding Medicare dollars, the overpayment rules give the government a heavier belly club.
Okay.
And physicians are obliged under the existing law to return Medicare overpayments. And if they do not do so, they face liability under the FCA and the Civil Monetary Penalty Act, as well as exclusion from government health care programs.
Right there can hurt a physician, a hospital, or regular practitioner, or a clinic. So right there, that sounds pretty heavy. So basically what they're going to do is comply or face the consequences, right?
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah, and the bottom line is that 60-day window.
All right. Well, and let's talk about, I got another story, Roy, about Medicare fraud. According to the Philadelphia Business Journal, they reported that after about 3 years of court deliberations, they found a 68-year-old nurse, which I will not say their name, was guilty for her role in scamming Medicare out of $9.32 million.
My goodness.
This nurse was a director of a professional services company for a home care hospice company, and it sounds for about roughly 3 years, beginning in 2005. During that time, she authorized and supervised the admission of patients for hospice services that they did not need or were not eligible for, according to, of course, court documents.
Right.
Can you imagine that? So under her oversight, the hospice made about $9.32 million in fraudulent Medicare claims. Of course, she was convicted and she was sentenced to 14 years in prison, which sounds okay, great.
That wouldn't be worth $3 million to me. It wouldn't be worth any amount of money.
But as nurses, it's like, my God, you know, nowadays you can be thrown in prison. Prison. She's going 14 years now. Of course, good behavior, blah, blah, blah. We don't know. But still, A, she lost her license. She went to prison. She's going to be a felon. But here's the funny thing. The $9.32 million, well, she's not going to pay that back. So Medicare just lost $9 million. She's in the prison, three hots in a cot, and we're still taxpayers. Yeah. We're still out $9 million.
And it's probably going to cost us another $9 million to house her the next 4 years.
Almost, with how the prisons are running. Right. But that's for another show. Okay. Here's one more, too. And this is very interesting. Now, here's a good one with Medicare. It says, I found this online as well. Your right to refills if Medicare drops coverage of your drugs. And basically what the article basically says, and I encourage our listeners to look this one up because this might affect you, especially Medicare recipients. All Medicare drug plans, including Medicare Advantage plans with prescription drug coverage and standalone drug plans, must offer these transition refills. So basically what it's saying is that Medicare drug plans are required to offer you a 30-day transition supply of drugs you were taking. So if you're changing plans, you're changing from maybe a Medicare Advantage to maybe Medicare to Part D or back and forth and everything like that, you know how as case managers, we know that anytime anybody switches a plan, there's that 30-day lag. So what they're doing is they're basically saying that they can get a 30-day supply of drugs probably on top of what they're doing or what they're getting just to cover them for the 30 days. I know like with health plans, you can like say you're going to go on vacation or something. You can like once in a great while, you just call the health plan and say, I need another prescription refill for, you know, because I'm going on a vacation or I'm going on a trip or I'm going somewhere where I'm going to maybe go out of the country or something like that. So this is yet another good thing that Medicare is. I know there are a lot of times we'll talk about Medicare is like trying to, you know, save money and tighten the regulations, everything. But Medicare is also trying to do right by the consumer as well. So it's a balancing act, and I applaud their efforts.
It's a good thing. I mean, patients are already under enough stress as it is because they're patients and they're sick, and so they don't need other added problems. So this 30-day thing sounds pretty good.
Absolutely. Okay, that does it for the news, and we are going to go into our commercial break. But when we come back, Roy, we have a guest on the phone. Maybe you could quickly tell us who's going to be on the phone with us.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to have Jeannie, and she is going to be calling from Missouri. She's going to be actually in the Kansas City area where she's been a physical therapist for 30-some years.
All right. So we'll be able to ask her a lot of good questions, I guess, about physical therapy.
Yeah, yeah.
And we'll find out what her she specializes in. And I'm sure it's going to be chock full of a wealth of information for our members about physical therapy. So we urge you to stay right there. We'll be right back, and we will learn about physical therapy. Hey, everybody, it's Eric from the Informed Patient Radio Show, and I'd like to tell you about our friends at Thousand Oaks Family Wellbeing, headed up by Jeff Sherman, Master Herbalist. They specialize in herbology, live cell analysis, neurofeedback, and much, much more. They've got an extensive product line, about 3,000 products, believe it or not. Some of them are private label by Jeff Sherman, and he does great consultations, and he comes highly recommended. So listen, give our friends there at Thousand Oaks Family Wellbeing a call at 805-494-0800 or find them on the web at TOFWB.net. That's TOFWB.net.
And now, back to the program with Eric and Roy.
Well, welcome back to the Informed Patient Radio Show, and we do have another guest, but this guest is now on the phone with us. So, Roy, would you like to introduce our guest?
Absolutely. Today we have Jeannie, and she's in Missouri, of all places, in the Kansas City area. And Jeannie is a physical therapist, and she's been in the home physical therapy for several years. And welcome to the show, Jeannie.
Good morning, okay, I'm not good at this.
That's okay.
It's okay, don't worry about it.
So anyway, Jeannie, part of the reason that that you're on our show today is to inform patients and our listeners about what happens in the physical therapy world. And I understand most of your physical therapy treatments and all that has been in the home versus in the hospital. Is that correct?
Very true, yes.
Okay, and how many years have you been a physical therapist?
Right around 30, did 10 years in-house physical therapy, and then the last 20 years has been home health physical therapy.
Okay. And what would you say would be the overall differences between somebody getting physical therapy and the hospital? That's what you mean when you're saying in-house, correct?
Correct. In-house physical therapy is generally more aggressive. Home health physical therapy follows up after a patient is discharged from the hospital.
Okay. And when somebody's in the acute hospital, how often do they generally get physical therapy when they're there?
Rehab patients get physical therapy twice a day, and your skilled patients get physical therapy once a day.
Wow. Okay. And so in the home setting, which you said you've done for the last 20 years, what amount of therapy is usually given in the home?
Generally, therapy sessions last probably about an hour. Home health physical therapy starts with an evaluation process. Goals are set for the patient, and then patient in the home health is generally seen three times a week. And then we leave a home exercise program and walking distance for the patient to follow through with when we're not there.
I see. And what can you give us an example of some of your typical patients, like why a physician would order home physical therapy versus somebody that's in the hospital?
Home health physical or any therapy, whether it's in the hospital or with home health, requires doctor's orders. And home health physical therapy is different than home care. Home care is where a patient and or the family can hire out help, not only for walking or exercising the patient, but for basic patient care. Home health, we come in and we have a focus, and that's strictly for the exercise program and endurance walking. And then, again, we leave a home exercise program for the patient to follow through with recommendations that they need to get up out of a chair or out of the bed, hopefully hourly, to maintain overall endurance values.
Okay. And on that note, can you give us a little bit of a background of maybe some of the difference between, like you said, like home health versus an actual licensed physical therapist that's, coming out to the home to see a patient, and the things maybe that you would be able to do versus, a home health aide?
Home health physical therapy, it is all licensed personnel. We all have state licenses that we have to maintain. And again, it's ordered by the doctor. Patient is initially seen, evaluation is done, goals are set, and then we follow through and try and work the patient up to those given goals. Exercise programs can be a sitting exercise program, a laying down exercise program, a standing exercise program. More aggressive with getting the patient into standing balance home exercise program, gait endurance values from minutes, more so minutes versus feet, because that requires more energy values from the patient, and stair climbing if the patient's in a house where they need to utilize stairs to get to the bedroom and or the bathroom.
This is Eric, and I have a question. Do patients typically have to meet or exceed milestones say they don't meet the milestones, can they continue having physical therapy like indefinitely at home until they meet the milestones? So what are the restrictions and limitations there?
All doctor orders are generally every 2 weeks. And that's more specific probably for orthopedic patients. Patients that are for endurance values, will set them up for 2 to 4 weeks. If patient is not compliant, then generally we'll pull out before that time period. Endurance patients tend to be what we call frequent flyers, and that's your congestive heart failures, your COPDers that we see when they go back into the hospital. When they're discharged, therapy and nursing is automatically ordered to follow through with the patient to keep the patient from re-entering the hospital. And again, we review, if they're frequent flyers, we review the home exercise program, the getting up and walking hourly. So after we've seen them initially and they've gone back in the hospital, we pick them up again. Usually that's short term, 1 to 2 weeks. Initially, we'll see a patient anywhere from 2 to 6 weeks. Orthopedics are generally ordered for a 2 week period of time, and then we have to check back in with the doctor to get further orders. Total hips are generally short term because they're just working on transfers and walking,
right,
followed with some exercises per doctor if the doctor okays exercises for that for total hips. Total knees are a little more aggressive, and we really push that the patients do their exercises twice a day, and we'll initially start total knees daily and then cut them down to 3 times a week. Until they go back in and get their staples out, then they're usually transferred over to outpatient physical therapy.
Okay. Thank you. And for our members to know, I know there's, from my experience as a case manager, I know that patients can receive physical therapy not only as an inpatient patient, but they can also receive physical therapy in acute rehab, which could be a part of the hospital, skilled nursing facility, and home. Could you quickly, briefly tell our listeners the difference between the physical therapy and acute rehab? Or ARU versus a skilled nursing facility, also known as a SNF?
Okay, now here in Missouri, we no longer have skilled in the hospital setting, so if patients are not transferred to the home setting, then they are transferred to a nursing home skilled facility,
okay,
or they are transferred to nursing home rehab facility. We don't always pick up those patients after they return home because they have received more aggressive therapy.
Okay.
Versus the hospital, you know, and then transition into the nursing home.
Right.
And Jeannie, what would be the difference for, say, a patient transitioning to a skilled nursing facility versus an acute rehab unit? And the acute rehab that is done in the acute hospital, is that correct?
Right, yeah, and rehab is more aggressive therapy, so they get physical therapy, occupational therapy, and speech therapy twice a day. Skilled patients that are not orthopedics or strokes generally just get your therapy once a day.
I see. And in the acute rehab, what kind of patients would they be seeing versus, say, patients at the skilled nursing facility or ones that are sent home directly where you would be seeing them?
Okay, anything acute, again, will be primarily orthopedics. Strokes have been on a downslide. You don't see that many strokes anymore versus when I got out of school in the 70s, most of my patient load was strokes. Now, you know, in the 2000s, most of our patient load is orthopedics. And then the rest of them are generally your congestive heart failures and your COPDers.
And what about, say, trauma patients? Would they generally almost always go to the acute rehab, or just depends on the evaluation?
It depends on the doctor ordering it. There's protocol with orthopedics. Generally, they're sent home, and home health is ordered daily for 1 to 2 weeks, and then once they return to the orthopedics office and get staples out, then they're sent to outpatient physical therapy. Your COPDers and your congestive heart failures or any endurance. Again, we start generally 3 times a week. We're not as aggressive as we are with the orthopedics.
I see. And Jeannie, I was going to also ask you some of your bigger challenges maybe that you've faced over the years with patients in the home setting, or the differences of some of those patients that you have found challenging, or maybe the patient's family has found challenging and maybe hard to understand.
Strokes that require more than we have in physical therapy, we have assistance that a patient requires. It can be minimal assist, moderate assist, max assist. Your moderate and max assist, generally, if there's not family available, then you're kind of stuck against the wall in the home setting. When you need more than one person to transfer a patient and or stand and attempt to walk a patient, it's very difficult if you don't have family support in the home setting versus in hospital or your nursing home, skilled and rehab setting, where there's backup help. That's the big difficulties out in the home setting. And again, we get down to the home health versus the home care, and patients and families that have never had home health before think that we are home care, that we'll come in, provide anywhere from 2 to 8 hours worth of service, where they don't understand that home health physical therapy is, you know, 5 days a week, 3 days a week, 2 days a week, and we're there on the premises for like an hour's period of time to accomplish what we want to accomplish, versus the family doesn't understand that when you hire, home care is hired out help to assist with bathing, with transfers, with standing the patient, dressing the patient, that type of thing.
Not non-skilled type of services, not what they call custodial care, which is things that a non-licensed person can do, is, sounds like to me is what you're saying. And then, so what kind of equipments do you usually find? I understand like a physical therapist, a lot of times will make recommendations on what kind of equipment's needed at home. And I know you mentioned that sometimes like getting a patient out of bed, do they still use like a Hoyer lift, or is there any other type of equipment that's used in the home for transferring a patient?
Standard equipment for any physical therapy is a gait belt. Walking devices is usually determined in the hospital and provided to the patient at the hospital level. Medicare only provides one or will pay for one walking device a year. So whether that's a walker or a cane, yeah, your max assist in the home front usually ends up being with the assist of a Hoyer lift, and you teach the family how to use the Hoyer lift to get the patient from the bed to the wheelchair, from the wheelchair to a shower chair, that type of thing.
Can you explain how the Hoyer lift works? I'm just the basic mechanics of that and how the family uses that.
It is a rolling device. The base of it will spread out to a V to go under the bed. The patient is rolled to the side, and a canvas mat that is placed underneath the patient. The patient's rolled back over on top of the canvas mat. There is a chain from the Hoyer lift that has four hooks, two up by the shoulders and then two down by the knee. And then the Hoyer lift is a cranking mechanism, so you crank the patient up, which brings the patient from a laying down position to a semi-sitting position. Then the base of the Hoyer lift is brought back together from a V back to a center line. You pull it out, and then your base is still in your center line, so that enables you to push the base of the Hoyer lift under the wheelchair, and then you slowly crank the patient, who's in a semi-sitting position, down into the wheelchair. And the patient remains sitting on that canvas, so that when the patient is ready to go back to bed, you just have to hook up the canvas corners and crank the patient back up and then swing him over to the bed.
Thank you very much for that explanation. That was very helpful. I do have a question also. I know as a case manager a lot, I would also see the physicians or practitioners write for what's called a safety eval in the home. In your experience, who conducts the safety eval, and what is it generally used for?
That's required by Medicare on all initial evaluations for any patient, and we're looking at, again, like the nursing home or assisted living, the patient has to be able to exit the home in case of a fire, so you give recommendations of picking up your throw rugs. We see a lot of houses that are severely cluttered. All we can do is make recommendations that these type of safety things are done so the patient, for the reason the patient can exit the home in case of a fire. And people have a lot of throw rugs in their house. There's a lot of clutter. And then again, it flips over to occupational therapy for safety in and out of the bathtub, and what type of device, whether they want a chair that sits in the bathtub or a slide over bench for the safety of the patient.
I have another question too. Speaking of safety, now, as a nurse, I can't tell you how many countless seniors come in with hip fractures. Can you, in your experience, can you kind of shed some light on what is the most common cause of, besides falling, but what is usually generally the actual cause of the fall that results in the hip fracture? So from your experience, what do you see the most common things seniors do to fall to break their hip?
And again, it's the throw rugs, it's the clutter, or it's the patient's imbalance factors.
Right.
And which is why physical therapy, you know, besides the safety issues, we try and teach through our exercises and get the patient into more aggressive standing balance exercises to overcome some of that.
Okay. And you, do you guys go over, I'm assuming you also go over, like, because I notice a lot of my hip fracture patients I took care of, their hips happened at about 3 o'clock in the morning. And I'm assuming that's because they're trying to get out of bed to go toilet. Are you teaching them how to exit the bed in a more safe fashion and stuff? Maybe you can kind of tell our members what you guys do in, you know, to help the seniors with that.
A lot of times that's a lighting issue. There's not night lights on. Again, it's the clutter and the rugs on the floor.
Okay. Oh, all right.
And Jeannie, I know you mentioned occupational therapist, and for our listeners, a lot of people wouldn't necessarily know if they're not in the business the difference between a physical therapy person and an occupational therapist. Can you highlight a little more on that, and then also the differences and how you work in conjunction with each other?
Physical therapy will be working with a patient's walking, transfers, and leg exercises. An occupational therapist will be focused on arm exercises. They'll be focused on bathing safety. They'll be focused on practicality in the kitchen, if they can prepare simple and light meals in order to sustain themselves, especially if they're independent livers without family.
Okay. And how often does a physical therapy make their visits to you? Are they as involved generally as much as the physical therapist, or is the physical therapist generally the primary person that's coming out to the house, and then the physical therapy is, I mean, the occupational therapy would be there as an enhancement? Is that how I'm understanding this?
Well, no, they have a specific job just like we do. Generally, when in home health, physical therapy will see the patient 3 times a week, and occupational therapy will come in the opposing 2 days a week. Home health physical therapy, especially with a patient newly discharged from the hospital, is very much on the weak side. They fatigue out rapidly. If both of us show up on the same day, then usually the patient doesn't have energy for the second person showing up that day, so we try and alternate our days. Bathing and dressing takes a lot of energy that people just don't realize, especially after you've been hospitalized. That's a lot of energy value, just like doing physical therapy, which is the leg exercises, standing exercises, and your walking values. Takes a lot of endurance values that patients just don't have when they first get home from the hospital.
I see. That's great information. Anyway, I also wanted to ask you about physical therapy as a whole, like in going in the community. Do you take patients into the community ever, and do the occupational therapists get involved with any kind of thing like that? Like, I don't know, car transfers or anything like that?
Again, everything is doctor's ordered, you know, so we see a wide variety of patients, but most of our patient load is orthopedics, which is more total hips than it is total knees. Again, we don't see as many strokes as we did back in the 70s when I first got out of school, because the medication is handled so much better, and the congestive heart failures and the COPDers are your endurance value patients, and they are our frequent flyers.
Okay.
And they're the ones that we try and keep out of the hospital by keeping them stronger and building up their overall endurance.
Great, Jeannie. Well, I really appreciate you coming on the show today, and you've really opened a lot of eyes to people that wouldn't understand, you know, the things that happen in a home situation when somebody goes home. And I know there's a lot of times there's confusion of why somebody's not getting physical therapy every day. And then, or what's the difference between an occupational therapist and physical therapist and that kind of thing. So thank you again so much for being so kind of explaining all that for us today.
It's been great talking to both of you.
Yeah, thank you so very much. We'll hope to have you on again. What do you think?
Oh, I'm game.
All right, sounds good. Well, folks, that wraps up another episode of the Informed Patient Radio Show. Please tune in again for more important information that can affect you and your family. So bye for now.
Goodbye.
You have been listening to the Informed Patient Radio Show with Eric and Roy. For more information, please visit us at informedpt.com. Tune in next time for more information regarding the healthcare system and how it affects all of us.